A former friendly hello! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN family of podcasts. We've got a great podcast for you as we head out west in a few minutes. In segment number two, we're going to be chatting with our good friend Curtis Rogers, who does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports. We're going to unpack what we saw in day number one of college basketball with the results of the West Coast teams. What do we make out of Arizona being able to take down Florida? How much slash little should we be putting into these results that we're seeing here in the first few days of the college basketball season? Some of the surprise teams, and do have to talk about Gonzaga. We're going to be doing that with Curtis in a few minutes in the final segment. Going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Wednesday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one or two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter slash X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, naming does not matter, so per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter slash X questions today, but Coast to Coast Hoops is sponsored by Better. That is BETR. Better is a daily fantasy sports app where your sports knowledge can turn into cash fast. Download Better or visit BETR.app now. Sign up today with the promo code of VSIMPOD, VSIMPOD, and you'll get a free $10. No deposit necessary. And, well, what is necessary is trying to be able to get some wins on these games. So let's take a look back at everything that we saw in college basketball on Tuesday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The number one team in the land looked pretty stout. They were able to cover the opening number. If you took Purdue very, very late when this got above 32, you were unable to get there. But for Purdue, they do get the job done, 82-51. Defense was very on point for Purdue in this one, as for Evansville, it's not like they turned the ball over a ton, only 10 turnovers, but Evansville, 7-34 from three-point range, they shot 30% from the floor, not a lot doing there. And for Purdue, Fletcher Lawyer was the main headliner in this one. How about him being able to put in there a nice rock-solid 30 points for Purdue, and Oscar Clough in his debut looked pretty solid in 19 minutes, so he didn't have to play long in this one, 9 points, 10 rebounds. Braden Smith, even though he didn't score a ton, 11 assists to go along with his 6 points, and for Purdue, they go 13 of 29 from 3 with Lawyer, who I mentioned, going 7 of 10 from 3-point range, so a very rock-solid start to the season there. For Kentucky, they do not cover the north of 30 points against Nichols, but defense looked much better. The offense got off to a little bit of a shaky start, 77-51 the final. This was one of those totals that got shot up by a whole gobton amount of points. You had a few totals that they had more than 7-point line moves. Some of them were correct. This one was very much incorrect, as Nichols, they were unable to throw in there all game long. And I mean, for Kentucky, they had their issues in terms of their three-point shooting as well. Nichols goes just 4 of 24 from three-point range. They shoot 30.2% from the floor. And then for Kentucky, you were able to have a nice rock-solid debut for Mr. Chandler in this one, as 15 points out of Colin Chandler. That was able to lead the way for the team. For Kentucky, off the bench, Denzel Aberdeen was able to supply the team with 10 points. Only 7 of 27 from three-point range for Kentucky, and a little bit concerning that they went 12 of 22 at the free throw line. Was a little bit of a silent game for Ortega Owe, but by his standards, he had 13 points. But Kentucky, they get a nice easy win, and that defense did look very much improved in that one. The big headline game of the night was the fact that Duke gets a job done against Texas. They win and cover by a count of 75-60, as for Duke, it was a slow start for Cameron Boozer. He had 0 points in the first half. He finished much stronger, though. How about 15 points, 13 rebounds out of him? It was the Isaiah Evans show, though. 4 of 8 from 3-point range. He supplies the team with 23 points, and for Texas, they shoot just 32% from the floor. 5 of 17 from 3-point range. He did have Jalen Swain be able to step up with 16 points, but Tremont Mark, he was looked at as a guy that was going to be a headliner for this team. Only 2 points, so Jordan Pope off the bench in a 6th-man role. He was able to supply 15 points, and then Texas Tech all over Lindenwood. They were able to win, and they were able to cover a rather hefty number, as they were laying in a lot of places right around about 29.5 or so points. They do it by a count of 98-60 for Lindenwood. They shoot a nice hearty 31% from the floor and 5 of 21 from three-point range. Meanwhile, for Texas Tech, Christian Anderson, how about a 34.11 assist double-double out of him? He goes 3 of 7 from 3. Donovan Atwell, he was able to supply a 6 of 13 three-point shooting performance. JT Toppin didn't even play in this game, and they did not need him because they were just all over Lindenwood in this one. So the ranked teams, they were very much able to roll on Tuesday. Now, I am doing this right around about midnight Eastern time, so we don't quite have a final in terms of some of those late West Coast games. Right now, I personally am sweating out this Hawaii versus Oregon game. That was 33-26 at the half. Very much a game that is trending under, as it's going to be interesting to see what Oregon does with Jackson Shellstead currently dealing with that hand injury, as in the first half, if you were watching the game, they were featuring a lot of KJ Evans. He actually had 3 assists, very versatile guy, and Kai Simpkins was able to come in. He supplied the team with 11 points, so we shall see what happens with regards to that final. For South Carolina, team has been a little bit more defense-oriented over the last few years. They get the job done against North Carolina A&T, this by a count of 91-72. Now, they do not cover the north of 20-point spread, but for South Carolina, they are glad to have Michi Johnson back in the fold. He's able to supply 14 points, help lead the way with 4 assists, and then you had a very nice performance out of Elijah Strong off the bench. He was strong, being able to give the team 11 points. He was able to go 1 of 2 from 3-point range, and South Carolina as a whole, 14 of 32 from 3-point range, and you did have LeRon Walker, shout out to him for North Carolina A&T, helping the team cover the spread. He had 22 points in this one. I mentioned we saw some big line moves in terms of some of the totals, and one of the big ones was Alcorn State versus Florida State. An opener of 145 and a half shot up to about 156 and a half, 157, and in this case, it was very much warranted. Florida State, they get the win 108-76. That line went from them being an 18-point favorite to being 26.5-27, and they do manage to cover all numbers just barely in this one as they turned it on in the second half for Florida State. Chauncey Wiggins was the headline scorer in this one, 22 points, 5 boards. For Florida State, they go 13 of 30 from 3-point range, and hey, Alcorn State went 8 of 16 from 3-point range themselves. But for Alcorn State, they allowed Florida State to pull in their 14 offensive rebounds. That was not necessarily great, to say the least. And for Alcorn State, they did lose a turnover battle in this one, 21-8, as Davion Williams, he was trying to go for a triple-double, 13.6 rebounds and 8 turnovers. So that was not necessarily amazing for Alcorn State. You also saw a massive total move in terms of the Oral Roberts versus Oklahoma State game. This went up to about 166.5, 167 on the close. And it depended upon your number if you got there, as you saw 96 points in the first half, and then things greatly slow down in the second half, a combined 70 points in the second half, and Oral Roberts was down by 4 at the half. They do not cover double figures, 95-71 the final in this one, as for Oklahoma State, it was a 21 spot from Victorious Miller. He comes in from LSU, and he made his presence known right away. Christian Coleman, he supplies 15 points for Oral Roberts, 8 of 38 from 3-point range, so that's the big reason why they did not cover in this one, even though they were even up with regards to turnover battle, 15-15, and they did get 18 points out of Ty Harper. But you had Oral Roberts in this one, it was a trend of a lot of the underdogs that we saw on Tuesday. They had a relatively good first half, and then in the second half, they completely faded in the abyss as Oral Roberts closes as about 20.5-21-point underdogs, and then another underdog that faded into the abyss. If you had UNC Greensboro, that's just absolutely brutal, as they were actually leading by 1 point at the half against Kansas State as north of 16-point underdogs. I think they closed in some places as high as like 18 or so, and for Kansas State, they outscore UNC Greensboro in the second half, 60-30, 93-64 final in this one. PJ Haggerty, nice debut from him, 27 points. He only goes 1 of 4 from 3, but Nate Johnson, he went 6 of 7 from 3 as Kansas State 14-27 from 3-point range. They win the rebound battle by a count of 42-31. And for UNC Greensboro, 18 turnovers. They lost 9 out of their top 10 scorers from a season ago, so that was a little bit less than tremendous from them. We've really been seeing these underdogs have a tough go of it to begin the season, but how about a nice double-figure dog being able to give you a cash? The New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT, has 14.5-15-point underdogs. They get the outright win in the debut of Mike Magpio as the coach over at Fordham, 72-61 the final. And for NJIT, David Bolden, boy was he bold, and given the team 18 points. And for Fordham. They went 4 of 24 from 3-point range. NJIT, 12 of 22 from 3-point range. Fordham actually wins the turnover battle and the rebound battle. They win the turnover battle 11-8, 45-37 in terms of the rebound battle, but when you have that big of a 3-point shooting discrepancy, that is a very, very big-time equalizer out there. You saw East Carolina barely squeak by Georgia Southern, so they do not get the cover, but 92-89, the final. East Carolina was a little bit more of a slow-tempo team last season, and Jordan Riley, he kicked it up. He was able to get the 22 points, and East Carolina, they put up the 92 points while going just 4 of 20 from 3-point, and Georgia Southern, they hang in this game by shooting 9 of 22 from 3-point. Spud Webb, no, not the former slam dunk champion, he's out of eligibility, but this Spud Webb was able to give the team 16 points, and Alden Applewhite was able to lead the way. He had 21 big ones out there. As I am doing this, we are seeing Nevada just completely lambasting Louisiana Tech right now. This is a score of 77-50. Game has just went final, and you were able to get 24 big ones for Nevada out of Chuck Bailey. So that offense is certainly looking like it's humming. That defense has been pretty rock solid. And for San Diego State, they're about to cash in under, and they are about to cover the north of 20-point spread against Long Beach State. As I'm doing this, 2 minutes remaining, they're up 74-43. And for San Diego State, they were without their big man in Magoon Gwath. We will see when he's going to be able to return to the floor. And Reese Waters was also out, but they didn't need him in this one, as you had Alzee Harrington come off the bench for 13 points. Tay Simmons came off the bench for 10 points. Very much a whole is greater than some of its parts effort. As I'm doing this, the team is 11 of 23 from 3-point range. And for Long Beach State, 21 turnovers. They hit blackjack on the turnovers. That's not necessarily going to be getting the job done for them, but this is going to be getting the job done, as Southern Utah, they were a pretty sizable underdog against Arizona State. They do not get the win, but they do find a way to just barely get within 17.5 points. They lose 81-64, so you're able to get the under in this game as well. We've been seeing quite a few overs here early on during the college basketball season. As for Arizona State, Moore Massam Diop was able to come in. He supplied the team with 14 points, and Arizona State, 9-23 from 3-point range. Southern Utah, they do go just 4 of 25 from 3, but won the rebound battle 40-39. Nice gritty effort there, as you had Elijah Duvall be able to supply the team with 17 points, so Southern Utah is a bit of an underdog. They do find a way to be able to get within that number, and Wichita State was able to pull away late as well. They get the job done against UNC Asheville. This by kind of 75-58 spread of about like 7.5 points was very much in question until the final few minutes, as Keenan Giles, who comes on over from UNC Greensboro, 20 big points in this one. Wichita State was a rough 3-point shooting team last year, went just 4-16 from 3, and we all remember when Paul Mills was at Oral Roberts, typically a high-octane offensive team, but they did a nice job putting the clamps down on defense in this one, and then we did see West Virginia be able to get a win and cover and a very nice under against Mount St. Mary's by a count of 70-54. It was actually Mount St. Mary's who was able to get the cover on the close. The opening number was 16. Closing number was more around 19.5-20. So that got lit up just a little bit there. But the slow and controlled style of Russ Hodge from North Texas, that very much did translate to West Virginia, as West Virginia actually shoots right around about 44% from the floor. Not great, but not awful. West Virginia actually lost the battle on the glass 38-29, but they won the turnover battle 20-9. As for West Virginia, Jasper Floyd, 25 points. He followed Hodge on over to West Virginia. Nice debut there. And for Mount St. Mary's, had a little bit of a tough time taking care of the ball. Xavier Lipscomb, how about 8 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and 6 turnovers. So he did a nice job being a matrix and filling up every single column of the stat sheet. And he had a little bit of a scare for Missouri State. They were at home against Missouri Southern State, and they were trailing at the half. That's a non-D1 school, by the way, but they pulled out an 88-71 win. So we did not see any tomfoolery with the non-Division 1 teams taking down a D1 team like we saw with Boise State on Monday. But if you're looking trend-wise at college basketball, this is with a few late games still pending in college basketball, but it has been a very overwhelming season thus far in college basketball. The over is hitting at 58% with a few of those late games pending, 69 overs to 51 unders, and the favorites, they are cleaning house against the spread. They have gotten off to a 71-50-1 against a spread record start, And home favorites are hitting at about 58%, 68-49-1 against the spread. So we will see if that continues moving forward. And that's what we're all seeing in college basketball right now. Coming next, how about if we do chat with our good friend Curtis Rogers about what we're seeing in terms of the West Coast Hoops, what we all saw night number one, and how much we can take from these early season results. That's up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eames Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Are you looking to get an inside edge this college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at cbbanalytics.com. That is cbbanalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter. And start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. And we're back here, lovely Las Vegas, for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eames Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Curtis Rogers aboard. He does an incredible job over at 710 Seattle Sports, taking a look at this great game of college basketball that we all know and love. And I mean, this man does a little bit of everything. He does pre and post game hosting for the Seattle Mariners, helps out with the Seattle Seahawks, does some Seattle Kraken work. He, much like myself, loves college basketball. We go all the way back to many, many years ago out there in the lovely city of Portland, Oregon. So that's a nice tie-in there. And this man, he is an Arizona alum. So we do have to talk about that. You're able to follow him on Twitter /X at A Kid From Kent altogether. And Curtis, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, always happy to hop on with you. And we're both well-traveled, especially out in the West Coast. And I can't tell you how excited I was to watch a full slate of college basketball last night. It was incredible to see everybody back in the gyms after such a long summer. It's fall now, and that means it's college basketball time, and I'm super excited for the season that lies ahead. And also, we've got actual games to react to now. This is just such a fun time in college basketball.
Absolutely, and your alma mater was the team that really stole the show night number one. They knock off the defending champs out here in lovely Las Vegas. Koa Pete looked like a very bona fide superstar there. And how did you view that game with Arizona being able to get the job done against a Florida team that was the flip favorite in the game? Arizona, certainly the defense, it looks like, might leave a little bit of something to be desired, but that offense looked very, very prolific.
It did. And you obviously mentioned Koa Pete and his phenomenal performance, maybe the greatest freshman debut we've ever seen in college basketball history, which is saying something. 30.7 boards, 5 assists, just eye-popping numbers. And when you look at the game film, yeah, he was definitely imposing his will on that Florida Gators ball club. But I think, to me, the standout guy for Arizona is the veteran point guard, Jaden Bradley, who, as we know, you got to have a veteran backcourt if you want to have success in March. And you look at Arizona and what they roll out there with Jaden Bradley at the one, that's a very enviable spot, especially for a team that I think has pretty high hopes this season, especially in a deep Big 12. And I don't think you can discount the talent that Arizona was able to bring back. I know they did lose a lot of guys, Caleb Love, KJ Lewis, Henry Vissar, but you've got Mo Crevis, who's a veteran, down low presence. You've got Tobey Awaka with Tennessee and also with Arizona, has played a lot of big minutes. Anthony Del Orso was a key contributor to last year's Arizona team. There's names on this Arizona roster that I think maybe didn't get enough respect in the offseason. I know they lost a ton of talent in the portal and also to the NBA, but I think you look at the totality of Arizona's roster, it's a good mix of young, obviously with Koa Pete and Brandon Burries. They've also got Aristotle. Ivan Kurchenko was starting as well, and then a great mix of veterans. So I think Arizona right now, obviously the impressive win on opening night. How much stock can you put into opening night? As we learned last year with Gonzaga's blowout win over Baylor, not a whole lot, but I think it's a great momentum builder for a team that I think is out to prove some people wrong, especially kind of the AP voters and maybe some voters in the Big 12 preseason polls.
Yep, I'm right there with you. And I do think that the West Coast teams in general did have a really good showing night number one, because we just mentioned it with Arizona for Gonzaga. They were taking on Texas Southern. So if they didn't have a good showing in that game, well, then you're really looking at some issues. But they dominated that game as well. And I do feel like West Coast basketball might be very much back this season, albeit the Mountain West with Boise State losing to Division to Hawaii Pacific. That was not a great look, to say the least. But all in all, I thought night number one went really well for the West Coast teams.
It did. You mentioned Hawaii Pacific. Their campus is basically a strip mall, which is pretty funny to see such a small school rise up like that and take down Boise State. But I thought overall it was a good one. Out here in the Pacific Northwest, you mentioned Gonzaga and their win over Texas Southern. I thought it was really encouraging to see Ty and Grant Foster kind of put everything behind him from the offseason, chip in with 14 points opening night. I thought Washington looked really good against Arkansas Pine Bluff. Hannes Steinbach, you and I have talked about him a lot on this podcast over the course of the offseason, very much living up to that billing of a potential first-round draft pick in the NBA. He was everything that he was advertised to be in that opener. Very encouraging to see that. Unfortunately, Washington State getting off on the wrong foot, losing a bye game to Idaho. It's been a long time since the Vandals have knocked off Washington State, so hopefully David Riley can get his ball club back on the right foot. Very interesting mix of players that they have at Washington State right now. So many international guys, so I wonder if there's maybe just some familiarity that these guys got to get right in order to get on the right page. But all in all, I think it was a really good night for West Coast hoops. And look, Mick Cronin, he's mad at his own team again. And that's one of the great signs that college basketball is back, because if Mick Cronin's not mad at his own UCLA ball club, the season really started.
Yes, I am right there with you. That is something that is a hallmark of college basketball, the gift that keeps on giving. And with UCLA, got a little bit of a test there from Eastern Washington. Very fortunate that I took the 30 there with them. That got there very easily, as Curtis Rogers, who does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports, is joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And how much do you want to be taking / not taking from these opening games? Because these teams, they are starting to find their footing. As we know, there were 2,500 players in the transfer portal. And what you see night number one, probably not what you're going to be seeing towards back half of the season as well. But I do think that's a good litmus test for some of these conferences. And when you see things like the ACC having some nice blowout wins from Louisville, but also Georgia Tech getting taken to overtime by Maryland Eastern Shore, I do think that that needs to be put into question a little bit as to what you're going to be getting in that conference.
Yeah, I think you can definitely take stuff from the opening week of games. I think especially with how quick the regular season goes by in college basketball, like, these games still matter. And obviously what Arizona was able to do against Florida, picking up a quad one win against the number three team in the country, that's going to go a long way to their tournament resume. I don't think Arizona's going to have any issue with, you know, resume building this season, but momentum is something that I think, you know, a lot of people will say momentum's not real in sports, but I think it can be. I think it absolutely can be, especially when you're picking up a win against a pretty quality team. And look, I mean, yes, Florida was ranked number three in the preseason AP poll. It's a different Florida team than last year's team that cut down the nets. No Walter Clayton. But they do have a pretty talented backcourt, Boogie Fland and Xavier Lee, two guys that were huge in the transfer portal, very sought after this past offseason. So it's not like Florida is devoid of talent either. So I think just for momentum's sake, it's important, especially getting those big quality wins. There's going to be a big game on Tuesday night, Duke and Texas. I know, obviously, Duke with the Boozer Twins, they're expected to win that one. But, you know, you look at Sean Miller and his program, he's probably trying to build momentum there as well. Texas probably not expected to, you know, throw their weight around so much in the SEC this year. But again, these wins can go a long way towards, you know, really building your program to how you want it to be and getting some more buy-in, I think, from the guys on the roster of like, okay, we can do this. We can absolutely, you know, compete with the best of the best in the country. And I think that's a thing that, you know, may not show up on the score sheet, but can ultimately benefit you as you roll through non-conference play.
Yep, I think so as well. And I think that it really speaks to how strong the Big 12 might be this year as well, because obviously we saw Arizona be able to go out there and get the job done. And then there are a lot of other, shall we say, pushover games for the Big 12, to say the least. We're recording this prior to knowing what all happened with regards to the games on Tuesday with West Virginia and company. But BYU got a little bit of a test from Villanova in the second half, but they found a way to persevere there. TCU taking that loss was not necessarily great, to say the least, but I do have to throw that in there. But all in all, I thought that it was a solid night for the Big 12, and it looks like this conference is going to be back in full force once again, sans perhaps again TCU.
Yeah, it's going to be a bloodbath in the Big 12 once again. You can make the case for about five or six teams right now as having the potential to win the conference. Obviously, Houston bring back the talent that they brought back. Kelvin Sampson, top five coach in all of college basketball. They are going to be, I think, everybody's target in the Big 12. But you look at Kansas, they get off to a flying start on Monday. Darren Peterson, I mean, what can you say about that kid?
Great
that hasn't
name.
Already been said? Yeah. Exactly. Your cousin, you'll see him at the family reunion later this year, but he has been fantastic in their opener. Obviously, he's going to be at the top of the NBA draft lottery, maybe even a potential number one overall pick when all is said and done. But Iowa State, I mean, they're going to be in it, obviously. Kansas with a pretty tough next game going up against North Carolina. That's on Friday. But you look at Texas Tech with Grant McCaslin, who is also a very underrated head coach across college basketball, and then BYU and their great opener against Villanova, EJ DeBanza. I mean, again, him and Darren Peterson, they're going to be neck and neck, I think, for Conference Player of the Year this year, Conference Freshman of the Year. Those two guys are going to have some pretty legendary battles. So I'm excited to see what the Big 12 is able to pull off this season. I think last year, maybe taking it on the chin a little bit because the SEC just went right by them in terms of, you know, who was the best conference in America last year. We all kind of assumed it was going to be the Big 12 and then everybody else. And then lo and behold, the SEC comes through with one of the greatest overall seasons we've ever seen from a conference. I still think the Big 12, pound for pound right now, it's going to be a really, really tough conference to navigate through if you are one of these teams that's kind of outside the top six. You can make a case for any one of those teams that's in the AP top 25 right now for winning the conference. And then obviously, you know, Arizona with a big win, they've asserted themselves as a team to watch out for in that Big 12 race.
Yep, I do think that the Big 12 race is going to be a lot of fun, and I do think that there's going to be lots of fun intrigue out there, and we already talked about the big result that happened in night number one, but were there a few other ones that stood out to you? Because we're doing this as the Tuesday games that are going on, so we are unsure what we got with regards to that slate, but was there a team that maybe impressed you slash a team that was a little bit off-putting since I threw it out there, TCU losing that game to New Orleans, and also Boise State, the fact that you lose to a team that is having higher learning in a strip ball, that's not necessarily where you want to be.
I mean, there were a couple of teams that stood out to me, obviously. Auburn just surviving Bethune-Cookman. That was an interesting one to me. True, very much so. I kind of wonder if the late off-season coaching change is going to, you know, be something that impacts this Auburn team throughout this season. So definitely something to watch out for with them. We talked a little bit about UCLA and how Eastern Washington just wouldn't go away in that one. Also, in the Big Ten, you had Ohio State giving up quite a bit defensively, 118-102, their win over IU Indy. I would imagine that the Buckeyes don't want to be giving up triple digits to most schools, let alone IU Indy, one that is definitely concerning. And then how about the offensive explosion we also saw in the Big Ten as well? Michigan putting up 121 on Oakland. That Michigan team definitely with some Final Four dreams this season, especially considering all the talent that they added in the transfer portal coming into this season. And then how about Illinois putting up 113 on Jackson State? Some pretty standout performances in the Big Ten. Yeah, Auburn to me, that one was an eye-opener, as well as Ohio State giving up 102 to IU Indy. That's not something I think any of us anticipated on night one.
And do you think that perhaps the Big Ten is having a little bit of a changing of the guard to teams that are scoring just a little bit more in general? Because it used to be the Big Ten, it was full of a bunch of big, clunky big men, and you wouldn't have a lot of, shall we say, efficiency with regards to the offense. But I mean, you mentioned Michigan, Wisconsin put up a 96 spot, even UCLA, they were able to put up 80 themselves. You saw Ohio State, they did give up 102, but they did score 118 points themselves. And it just feels like the Big Ten has had a little bit of, shall we say, a makeover with regards to a lot more, shall we say, prolific offenses than we've seen in the past.
Oh, yeah. And I think a clear example of that, Greg, is a team that I assume you grew up watching, and that'd be the Wisconsin Badgers putting up 96. That's not something that they've ever been known for, is prolific offense in Madison there. They put up 96 on Campbell. They're ranked 24th in the country coming into the season. So, yeah, I think potentially this could kind of stand as a changing of the guard a little bit in the Big Ten, considering what we know that conference to be historically. And I kind of wonder if the influence of the West Coast schools coming in has helped kind of shape things going forward. Also, maybe looking at, hey, the schools we go up against routinely in the Final Four and routinely in the NCAA tournament play a different style of ball and they're continually beating us. Maybe this is something that we need to look at internally and say, you know what? What we have done for 2+ decades just isn't going to cut it anymore. And also, if you're a talented high school kid or a talented kid in the portal, do you want to go to a place where 50, 60 points is what your offense is going to put up and you're going to run a system and it's not going to be anything like what you see in the pros where you ultimately want to get to? You know, we're going to see an offensive explosion in the college game soon, just like we've seen in the NBA. Obviously, the shooting in college basketball is nowhere near what it is in the NBA, but I think getting in the 80s and 90s is going to be a much more common occurrence in college basketball than it's ever been. And I think the Big Ten has the ability to kind of look within itself here and say, you know what, that is a style of ball that I know it's uncomfortable for the older fans in our geographic footprint, but this is what's going to help us get that elusive national championship that's evaded them for, 25 years now.
And speaking of a program that has been evaded of a title, I mentioned them a little bit in passing. We haven't talked about them too much, but how do we take a look at Gonzaga right now after they knocked off Texas Southern? You want to talk about good, prolific offense, a school that has been very much ahead of their time with regards to the offensive style. That would be Gonzaga, but the defense really stood out to me, and I just feel like out of everything that happened night number one and everything that we made out of teams in the offseason, Gonzaga is just not being talked about enough, and I feel like this could be a surprise year for a team that typically is in like the top 10 or so this time of year. They're not there right now, and I think when it's all said and done, they might be.
Yeah, I think that might partially be due to some Gonzaga fatigue across the national media, across the national landscape. And also, this is, I think, one of the lesser known Gonzagas over the last decade plus. I mean, they don't have the Chet Holmgrens or the Jalen Suggs or the Drew Timmies or the Corey Kisperts or anything like that. They do have Graham Ike, who is a very solid big in college basketball and has been so for, you know, 3-4 years now. Kind of wonder if this Gonzaga team might fly under the radar a bit. And it's going to be funny because I guarantee you at some point this year, Gonzaga will have, you know, 0 losses or 1 loss and they'll probably be in the top 10. And we're all going to be like, oh, that's right, Gonzaga, they're still really good. They're still really well coached. They're still a high-functioning program. They're not going anywhere, and I think the WCC is probably going to see another Gonzaga-St. Mary's final in the conference championship game, and I think one of those two teams is obviously going to win the regular season title as well. So I think this is a good spot to be in if you're Gonzaga. There's not a whole lot of preseason expectations for them in terms of a national title, which I think potentially could have, you know, been a bit of a distraction for some of those highly touted Gonzaga teams, but they were still able to go pretty deep in the tournament. Last year we saw, I believe it was their Sweet 16 streak get snapped. They had the longest one going in the country, so that's something they can look to get back this year. But I think this Gonzaga team, even though the conversation around used to be, I still think this team has loads of talent. I think they can very much rattle off a lot of wins this season and be, you know, maybe even a top 4 seed come NCAA tournament time.
Yep, I am right there with you. And out there in the WCC, it's going to be interesting to see what San Francisco does. We have to give them a shout out because their first game of the season was not on the betting board because they played against a Division II team named the UC Santa Cruz Banana Slugs. That's always a great name. And that's what we get this time of year where you got these teams playing against non-Division I teams like Bob Jones. Very, very bold of him to be playing 1-on-5. I always love to be able to make those jokes. And I know that you made a great Will Smith joke on my baseball podcast, Curtis. That's a little bit of what people can look forward to on your social media handle. You do such a great job breaking down a little bit of everything. So love to get people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, well, I love this time of year, Greg, too, as well. I always like to keep track on what Mary Baldwin is doing.
Yes.
She's always taking
on
other
bold of her to go up against a whole college basketball team all by herself.
Yeah, she's always been an adventurous one, that Mary Baldwin. We've got a lot of great stuff going on up here. Obviously, keeping tabs on the Zags, keeping tabs on the Huskies, the Cougs, Seattle U, Eastern. When that goes down, it's on seattlesports.com. You can check out our YouTube page, Seattle Sports, is where you can find us. And then also you can follow along on Twitter and Instagram, @akidfromkent is where you can find me. Greg, always have I'll blast talking college hoops with you.
Absolutely. Curtis, he does such an excellent job taking a look at this game of college basketball every single time he joins me. He lends such great insights and did so once again today. So a big thanks to Curtis for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming next, it is that time of the podcast that give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Wednesday as we hit some bank shots. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always a pleasure to be joined by Curtis Rogers. He does such an excellent job over at 710 Seattle Sports. Take a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights. He did so once again today. So a big thanks, Curtis, for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Wednesday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at GUnit_D1. We are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games in the bigger conferences first, and then the games involving teams in the MEAC, the SWAC, the Atlantic Sun Conference. Those are going to be the games that are going to be listed at the bottom, so a relatively equal divide there, and then the Southland as well is at the bottom, and pretty much time order in terms of that divide. So let's get things started with 637-638 on the card. Rider is on the road against Rutgers. Rutgers is an 18 to an 18.5 point favorite. Totals between 146.5 to a 147.5, and I'm going to be in on the under in this case. I set my total at a 136. Rutgers, up until last season, was really not an up-tempo team. They bring in Ace Bailey along with Dylan Harper, and they completely change their style, and yet they were still 126th in the country last year in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. As a matter of fact, for Rutgers, they have been 126th or worse in college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis each out of the last 19 seasons, so I don't think that that's going to be changing anytime soon. And if you go back 2 years ago to what the tempo was for Rutgers, it was more around 171st in the country. So this is not necessarily an up-and-down team. Ryder in recent years has been outside the top 200 with regards to total possessions per game. They're coming off of failing to get to the 60-point plateau against Virginia a few days ago. And for this Ryder team, you do have to have a little bit of fear with regards to the overall turnover factor of this team, as they just don't have a lot of guys that do a nice job in terms of handling the ball. Flash Burton, you have to figure, is going to be one of the main guys. He had 17 points in that season opener. Last year, he was able to do a nice job off the stat sheet, 7.5 points, not necessarily a great 3-point shooter, and that's why you've got Zion Cruz, a guy that last year he was shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range. He was a guy that was able to give you about 10 or so points per contest last season. You don't have a lot of size with this team. Daniel Alterhoff, he was seeing some good minutes tonight, number one. Caleb Smith as well, but this is going to be a team that's going to be a little bit undersized, but you do have to wonder with Rutgers, what are they going to be able to pack in terms of backcourt as well? This is a Rutgers team that they've got a lot of turnover from a season ago. They're looking at Aaron Buchanan, who over at George Washington last year, 10.5 points, supplied the team with about 6 boards, 6'7", a little bit of a this and that player. He should be a pop out. And then Tariq Francis, who comes over after he was solid at NJIT, 19 points, 4.5 boards, 3.5 assists, but a big giant leap in terms of competition this season. And with regards to what you're able to get down low out of Bay Fall, he's going to be able to win the battle down low, but it's not like these are overly dominant big men. Dylan Grant is really one of the lone holdovers from a season ago, so I do think that there's going to be a lot of transition for Rutgers. I think that they get back to that Steve Peichel defensive style, so I set my total 136. I'm willing to go under, but I'm going to be willing to take the points here with Ryder as well. Did set my line at a 16, so here at the 18+, we'll take those points with Ryder. 639, 640 on the card. Butler is playing us of Southern Indiana. The Screaming Eagles of Southern Indiana are a 19.5 to a 21-point underdog. Totals between 155 to 156. Did set my total at 148.5. I'm diving in on the under for Southern Indiana. They're a bit of an up-tempo team, but this is not a team that's going to be going like completely harebrained or anything like that. And for Butler, this is more of a mid-tempo team in my opinion. Last year, they were about 223rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Felt like they had a few more possessions in their games because they just didn't generate a lot of turnovers. 362nd in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. And then Southern Indiana last year, about 159th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Southern Indiana does have a little bit of turnover in the backcourt. backcourt, but I'm still going to be willing to take the points with them because you got a lot of turnover with this Butler team. Sans Finley Bizjak, who was able to shoot it relatively well from three-point range, came on strong towards back half of the season, but for Southern Indiana, bringing over Trey Thomas from Bethune-Cookman, who averaged 16 points, pair of assists per contest, that's big, and then an out-of-sight, out-of-mind guy in Ismail Habib. He was the main facilitator over at Portland State 2 years ago. Last year, was limited to 7 games due to injury. He's back in full force, so I do think that that is going to be a big factor for this team moving forward. And for Butler, I do like the fact that they bring in a few guys I think were a little bit under the radar, like a Michael Ajayi 2 years ago when he was out there in the WCC. I believe it was over at Pepperdine. He was shooting over 40% from three. He was able to supply that team with 5+ rebounds per game. I think that he's going to be rock solid. Yohan Traore has been around the block at SMU, UC Santa Barbara, Auburn. He's a guy that should be able to supply 7+ rebounds per game. So I do think that Butler is going to be a little bit improved down low, but you lose so many of those top scorers from a season ago. 7 out of their top 8 scorers are gone. Southern Indiana, they do have quite a bit of turnover in terms of that backcourt as well, but last year, Southern Indiana was hovering right around about 100th in the country in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. I do think that with a Butler defense that really is not going to be forcing the issue on them, that that's going to be working out well for them. Southern Indiana probably not going to be grabbing a lot of second and third chances. You've got a relatively undersized team, sans Devin Curtis, and Curtis, not a guy that I think is going to be seeing a lot of minutes last year. He was averaging like 1 point per contest, so I do think that this is a circumstance where we are going to be seeing this Southern Indiana team leaning on their backcourt, especially Shedarian Sharp, who he's spent the last 2 seasons over at Southern Illinois. Really didn't get out there on the floor too much, but he was able to give out 2.5 assists per game. I think that'll be a pass-first guy for a Southern Indiana team that does a nice job taking care of the ball to hold in this game. Semi-line at 14.5. I'm willing to take the points with Southern Indiana. Also made a total of a 148.5. I like the under. 641, 642 on the card. South Dakota's on the road against Creighton. Creighton is a pretty sizable favorite here, as you're going to be finding them between 27.5 to 28-point favorites. 166.5 is the total. Now, what I like about Creighton is that they bring in compound transfers. They bring in a pair of guys from Iowa in Owen Freeman and Josh Dix, so you've got good chemistry, and as we know, Iowa was very much an up-tempo team, but we've seen Greg McDermott's teams over the last few years play a little bit more slowly, and I think that's a byproduct of the fact that Greg McDermott has not really been diving into his bench too much. I think that that could be changing a little bit this year, but Creighton was 216th in the country in terms of total possessions per game last year, and they face a South Dakota team that they gunned it. They were number 3 in the country in terms of total possessions per game. A lot of that was due to the fact that they lost midseason their 7-footer in Cameron Fenz, though. Fenz, as a 7-footer, was giving you about 5 or so rebounds per game. The moment that he went down with an injury is when this team was really starting to crank up the tempo, and now that he's back in the fold, I do think that you're going to see a slower South Dakota team. South Dakota was fast, but not overly fast the season before, so I did set a total of a 159.5. I'm going to be one take shot on the under. It's going to be up to the Brunses to be able to help this team out, as Isaac Bruns, he's the main attraction. His brother is freshman. That's probably not going to be seeing a lot of time, but he last year was averaging about 14.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game in that season opener against Utah Tech. He was rock solid. He was able to give the team 23 points, so do like to see that. Jordan Crawford is a transfer that comes on over from Charleston, was really left in the shadow in a lot of, in terms of going behind a lot of three-point shooters, so I think that he's going to be able to step up in a big way. And for Creighton, I do think that this bunch is going to be able to be one of the better backcourts in all of college basketball, with bringing in Dix, who is a 40+% three-point shooter. I think that there's quite a bit of upside with Nick Graves, the transfer that comes in from Charlotte as well, a 17.5 point per contest guy for a Charlotte team that was playing at one of the slower paces in all of college basketball. And then you bring back some of these guys that were on the bench, I think are going to be seeing some minutes. Isaac Trout, Fredor Zuzic, I think that these are guys that they start to see some minutes. And then Jackson McAndrew, as a 6'10 versatile player, freshman last year, shot 35.5% from 3, 8 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. With having no Ryan Kalkbrenner, he's going to need to step up in a big way. He's going to be able to do so, and I think under the radar, El Kesa Dimitrovic, hopefully I got that correct, the 7-footer from Serbia, he's going to be able to give you a little bit of something down low, along with Liam McChesney as well. I think that Creighton has a lot more depth. I think that they're going to be playing fast, but not necessarily at warp speed, and I do think that we're going to see the South Dakota team start to slow down a little bit as well. Semi-line at 25.5. Creighton should be able to win this game convincingly, but I do think that with South Dakota getting a game under their belt against Utah Tech, that helps them out in this circumstance. I do like the under and the points with South Dakota. 643, 644 on the card. LSU is playing playing host to Tarleton State. Tarleton State is an underdog of 17.5 to 18.5 points. So on this game, it is 147.5 and going to be willing to take those points with Tarleton State. I did set them as a underdog of 16.5 points. With Tarleton State, they gave up over 90 points against SMU, but they actually scored 76 points against SMU as well. This for a team that last year was in the bottom five in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. They bring in a guy in Dior Johnson, who's a former top 75 recruit, and said a little bit of a checkered pass, but certainly a guy that's going to be able to put the biscuit in the basket. And then their top scorer from, I believe it was 3 years ago, Freddie Hicks, being back, and he looked back in full fours, 15 points, 5 assists in that season opener against SMU. That is absolutely massive for this team as well. Chris Impeka, he's going to be able to give you a bit of something against an LSU team that they don't return a lot from. A season ago, Deedon Thomas, he comes over from UNLV, where he was averaging 15 plus points. He's a mid-30s three-point shooter that does a nice job of being able to dole it out, but you lose those guys like Cam Carter and company from a season ago. So it's a backcourt that's in a lot of transition, and they're relying upon a lot of mid-major guys to be able to step up, like a Markel Sutton, who comes over from Omaha, where he was rock solid. 19 points, 8 rebounds per game, 6'8 combo player that's able to shoot it from three-point range. Pablo Tamba, he's going to need to play a little bit of a role after at UC Davis. He was averaging about 11.5 points per contest. I have to figure that he's a primary reserve. Max McKinnon did a little bit of this and that over at Portland, but once again, big giant stride forward. I think that they're going to be able to win the battle down low with Jaden Reed coming off of injury and Mike Nwoko coming in after averaging about 4.5 boards per contest over at Mississippi State as a starter there. But for LSU, they've always been a relatively solid tempo team under Coach McMahon, 70th and 72nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game the last 2 years. And I mean, perhaps it was a little bit of a byproduct of SMU, but Tarleton State typically is a top five team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They really didn't generate a lot of turnovers against SMU. They played much faster. This is just not a typical Tarleton team, one that I think is going to be much more equipped to be able to put up points, and I think we're going to be seeing that here. I did set my total 115.5. I like the over of Tarleton State. I think that they do just enough to hold within the line, set my line at 16.5, so taking those points with Tarleton. 645, 646 on the card. North Dakota State on the road against UC Davis. UC Davis is a 1.5 to a 2.5 point favorite. Totals between 142.5 to 144, and I do like North Dakota State outright on the money line. I did set them as a 2-point favorite. Now, for North Dakota State, they lose pretty much four of their top five scores from a season ago, but you bring back Damari Wheeler-Thomas, who he was injured all of last season. 2 seasons ago, he was a nice, solid double-figure scorer that was shooting in the high 30s from three-point range. That's some upside for a North Dakota State team that they looked very good in their season opener against Oregon State. It was a slow and control game. They lost that game by a count of 67-65. In that game, they shot 6 of 31 from three-point range. This for a team that last season they were shooting over 40% from three-point range on the road, and with all the losses, they're not going to shoot 40% from three-point range on the road once again this year, but I do think that's going to be a little bit better than it was at number one against Oregon State. Noah Federson last season, he was supplying 8.5 points. He shot about 38% from three-point range as a 6'8", a little bit of a combo player. Love the fact that they brought in Max Marley, who had some Division I experience at Central Michigan, of relation to Dan Marley, and this is going to be a North Dakota State team that takes a little bit of a stride back with regards to their three-point shooting, but I believe that they're a little bit of a better defensive team as well. And then for this UC Davis squad, they were just atrocious on offense last year, outside the top 320 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and it was just all about trying to be able to get the ball to Ty Johnson. Last season, this UC Davis team has been very reliant upon one guy really over the last few years to be able to generate offense, and if night number one is any indication of what's going to be to come, it looks like they're probably going to be relying a lot on Niles Cooper, who had 18 points in that season opener. Now, I will say, they're probably going to be looking a little bit at Connor Sevilla to be able to help out. Last season was a nice ancillary piece that gave the team 9 points, shot 36% from 3-point range, but for UC Davis, one of the lifebloods of this team is generating turnovers, and you just don't have the same guys that were able to generate turnovers in the past. So I do have a little bit of fear with regards to this defense. They are a team that's going to be quite a bit undersized in a lot of their games. They're going to be relying upon Nico Dokoc, who's been in the program for the last few years. Last year, gave the team 7 rebounds, about 2 blocks per contest. He's a rock-solid low-post piece, but he's really got no help around him. And then what you're going to be able to get out of the freshman and Marcus Wilson, I think, is intriguing as well, as he came over after he played like 4 or 5 games over at Washington State, head redshirt. He looks solid that night number one game, 9.6 boards, 4 assists, a little bit of a do-it-all player, but in the end, I think that North Dakota State, just a little bit more well put together. It feels like UC Davis just doesn't have that same identity that they've had the last few seasons in generating turnovers, and North Dakota State, they play sort of a make-it-and-take-it sort sort of game. They do a nice job of protecting the ball. They themselves are not going to generate a lot of turnovers, and they like to play slow outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. So set a total of 140. I like the under and North Dakota State outright on the money line. And then this will be the last game on the normal outsiders betting board before we hit the extra games. 647, 648, Eastern Washington on the road against Loyola Marymount. The Mount opened up as a 6.5-point favorite. Now I'm seeing between 7.5 and 9. The total on this game, it is between 155.5 to a 157. And I set my line at 11.5. I'm going to be willing to lay it with Loyola Marymount. Very spirited effort, night number one from Eastern Washington. Eastern Washington holds within single figures against UCLA, so that's something that you do like to see after Eastern Washington. They were 7-25 against the spread a season ago, and they do bring back quite a few of their rock-solid pieces from a season ago. Someone like an Andrew Cook, who was giving you 15 points per game, he's back, so that's going to be big. You've got Miles Boom Boom Powell, who didn't necessarily have the world's greatest year last year. He's back for a team under Dan Monson that I think that you're number 200 system. They're going to be able to get things going a little bit more. Dan Monson seems going all the way back to his time at Gonzaga, Long Beach State. They've always been relatively up-tempo teams, and last year that really wasn't the case for Eastern Washington, so I do think that they bump up that tempo a little bit. And then bringing in Isaiah Moses, who was over at UC Riverside. He had 15 points in that debut. He had double figures when he was over at Riverside the last few seasons. That's big as well. But for Loyola Marymount, I like the fact that they bring back MJ Amy. He, two seasons ago over at San Jose State, was averaging 15 points per contest. More of an ancillary guy last year, who put in there more like 8 to 9 points per contest. But Nikhil Sheldon's a guy that I think is going to take some strides forward as well. It's against a non-D1 team, but he was able to put in there 17 points in that season debut. And you go back to what he was able to do over at Eastern Illinois two seasons ago, 17 points per contest, 4.5 boards, mid-33-point shooter, just really fits this Stan Johnson system very well. It is going to be a Loyola Marymount team that throughout the season is probably going to be dealing with a little bit of a size disadvantage. Rikas Josias, who comes on over from LaSalle, he stands right around 6'11". He should be able to help out a little bit, but the good news is, in this circumstance against Eastern Washington, this Eastern Washington team just really doesn't have a lot of rebounding. They were getting a bit destroyed by UCLA on the boards, and I think that that's really going to be their undoing. I do think that Kyrie Huey is going to need to find his form that he had over at Idaho State two seasons ago, where he was averaging like 6 to 7 rebounds per game. But in the end, I do think that Loyola Marymount finds a way to persevere. Loyola Marymount under St. Johnson has typically been a little bit more of a slower team. I know that Eastern Washington is going to be looking to bump up the tempo a little bit more, but I feel like this is too high of a total. I said my total 147.5. I think that Loyola Marymount is going to be able to get their style, and that allows them to be able to cover this game. So I'm in on the under, and I'm willing to lay the number here with Loyola Marymount. Now we get the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-621, 306-622, LaSalle is going to be playing us at Coppin State. LaSalle is exploring a cover as a 15.5-point favorite. Total on this game, it is 142, semi-total 136.5. I'm in on the under. Coppin State, actually a relatively okay effort against Maryland, night number one, but for Coppin State, last two seasons, they have been a bottom 10 team in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. There is quite a bit of transition for this team. You have to figure that Khalil Horton is going to be playing a big role for this bunch. He had 19 points in that season opening game. They scored 61 points against Maryland, which that's honestly not too shameful, because that's a Buzz Williams coach team. That's a big-time bunch that they had to play night number one, so I don't read too much into that, but you're just not probably going to be able to get anything down low on this team. You had only one player get more than 3 rebounds in that season opening game, Taj Thewitt. They lose a lot of their good low post pieces from a season ago. They had to go to the non-D1 ranks to be able to find a lot of these guys, so it's just a big giant mismatch of guys. And for LaSalle, this is a team that's fighting a little bit of an uphill battle out there in the Atlantic 10, but that said, I thought that they did a really good job in the offseason hiring on a guy that I really liked over at LaSalle in Darius Nichols. He's going to be able to preach some tough, tenacious defense. He brought over a few guys that have some familiarity with him as well, like a Justin Archer, who he, when he was over at Radford, was averaging right in that neighborhood of about like 7 or so rebounds per game. Spent last year over at Georgia State, so that's pretty rock solid. And then additionally, you've got the Harrises, Josiah Harris and Truth Harris, who should be able to do a nice job playing with one another. But main guy in the backcourt is Josu Grullon. He comes over after he was over at UT Martin last year, a bit of a sixth man that shot 36% from 3, 12 points. points per contest. Should lend some support to Truth Harris out there in the backcourt. And then you've got a lot of versatile players like Noah Collier added a three-point shot over at William & Mary last year. Jerome Brewer, he was a very nice player with about 14 points, 4.5 boards over at East Texas A&M 2 seasons ago. Unfortunately, has dealt with injuries over the last few seasons, but I think the LaSalle is going to be tough, defense-oriented, and I think the Cobb State is just not going to do their part with this total. So buying at a 136.5 with regards to the total, in on the under, and I'm willing to lay up to 22 here with LaSalle. 306-623, 306-624. Delaware State is playing on the road against Temple. We give our O to Lane Kiffin go Owls as Temple does find themselves as 18-19 point favorites. And tonight's game, it is 154.5, and I'm going to be taking a shot on the under. I did set my total at a 143. Temple was a really good over team a season ago. A lot of that was due to the fact that they played a bunch of overtimes. If you look at their possessions per minute, they are more of a mid-tempo team. Meanwhile, their possessions per game numbers were very much warped by the fact that they just kept going to overtime, double overtime, triple overtime, so had a lot of harebraininess there. And I'm not necessarily big on this Temple team, but that said, Delaware State, they do lose a lot of pieces from a season ago, so it made this handicap a little bit tricky. I did set my line at a 13, so I'm going to be willing to take the points with Delaware State. Delaware State was able to do a nice job in terms of being able to elevate their defense last year. They became a top 125 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And for this Delaware State unit, you have to figure that this team is very much going to be running through Kareem Watson, who didn't see a lot of minutes a season ago, but a guy that began his career over at Cal State Bakersfield. His brother, the other Watson, he decided to transfer out of the program. He's a guy that was really able to elevate this team. And then Corey Perkins is a nice pass-first guy that is not going to give you a ton of scoring. Last year, only about 4.5 points per contest, but he's able to give you a steal per game. He was averaging about 3 assists per contest. He has spent some time as a starter. He's spent a little bit of time as a sixth man. I think that he's going to be able to step up in a big way. And then they bring in Zion Bethea. Bethea was over at Pepperdine a season ago, where he was putting in their 7.5 points, a career nearly 40% three-point shooter. That elevates a Delaware State team that was well outside the top 275 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. And then Ponce James. This guy was shooting about 44% from three-point range last season. That's going to help them out. Now, I do think the Temple is going to do a nice job of being able to tighten up the screws in terms of guarding the three-point arc this season. I have a little bit of question mark as to what you're going to be able to get down low. Muhammad Keita, he's a guy with 7'1" size, and I mean, he's been at St. John's, he's been at Tulsa, but was never really able to get minutes at any of those stops. He's a little bit of an upside guy that they're gambling on. Jabai Felt last season over at Bowling Green was able to give you about 6.5 rebounds per game. Really didn't have too much of an offensive game, though, and that means that you're going to be basing things around Darian Built for Tough, who he was over at Arkansas and Arkansas State last season. A part-time starter that shot in the neighborhood about 32% from 3, 8 points. He's able to give you 3.5 rebounds per game, but for Temple, they really didn't have that main trigger man in terms of a ball handler that last season. Masai Gilliard is another guy that was playing off the ball over at Manhattan, and they just have a mismatch of different guys that they do a nice job of being able to find some scoring. They don't really have that one guy that I think is going to be that alpha dominant ball handler. AJ Smith is another one of those guys. Good scorer over at the Citadel. Who gets them the ball is, I think, right now the big question mark for Temple, and I think that that means that this team is going to be a little bit out of sorts to begin the season. So I did set my total at a 143. I like the under end, and north of 13, I'm going to be willing to take those points with Delaware State. 306-625, 306-626. You've got Maryland Eastern Shore. They are on the road facing off against Georgia. Currently, this game has no numbers up on the board, but I've got my handicap. I set Georgia as a 31.5-point favorite. I'm willing to lay up to 31 with them. 32 or more taking the points with Maryland Eastern Shore. Set a total of a 143.5, 143 or less in on the over, 144 or higher the under. Maryland Eastern Shore played a game against Georgia Tech to open the season where neither team was able to get to 60 in regulation, so they were very much looking to play slow and controlled. You go back to what Maryland Eastern Shore did a season ago, they were a little bit more of an up-tempo team, a team that just got completely gashed on defense. They were outside the top 300 in terms of points scored on points allowed on a per possession basis, and I think two things can be true. I do think that Maryland Eastern Shore is a little bit better here in year number two under Cleo Hill, who he had to take the job at the very last minute last offseason coming over from Winston-Salem State, and I think that Georgia Tech might be just garbage this season as well. You saw Dorian Staples be able to have a pretty nice performance for Maryland Eastern Shore night number one, 5 points, 6 boards, did a little bit of this and that, and he's got some high major experience. He was an okay player when he was over at SIU Edwardsville a few seasons ago, but they're looking to a lot of guys that were at the non-Division 1 level to be able to mix and match with. Christopher Flippen, he was able to give the team 5.5 rebounds per game. He returns in the post, but you're looking at a lot of just turnover in the backcourt, and that led to 19 turnovers, night number one against Georgia Tech, and I think that a much superior Georgia team is going to be able to eat them alive. We saw Georgia knock off Bellarmine by 45 points, night number one. I don't know if it quite gets to 45 here, but Jeremiah Wilkerson, who was a double-figure scorer as a freshman over at Cal, he had 15 points, night number one. Blue Kane is a nice high 33-point shooter. Cannon Catchings is a former top 50 recruit that has really good versatility, and he looked pretty solid, night number one as well. This team isn't as, shall we say, massive down low as they were a season ago. They do lose guys like RJ Godfrey, but Semakuchu Surreal, I think, is going to be able to step up as a 6'11 big man down low. He had 6 rebounds in that opening day game, and then you just have a bunch of guards like Marcus Millender, Justin Bailey, that play really well off of one another. I do think that Maryland Eastern Shore is going to look to slow down this game. I think that they're going to have a little bit of success with it. Mike White has been looking to play Georgia a little bit more up-tempo here in recent years, so 143 or less in on the over, 144 higher the under. One to lay up to 31 here with Georgia, 32 or more, taking the points with the short. 306-627, 306-628. Marquette plays us to Southern. Southern's an underdog of 21 to 23 points, 148 to 148.5 is the total, and a semi-line at 18.5. I'm going to be willing to take those points with Southern. With Southern, they did get a bit lambasted at night number one against Arkansas. That's a really good Arkansas team, and I think Southern is going to be able to hold in there because they're facing off against a Marquette team that is one of the better teams in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Southern's right there, though. Southern Lions here was a top 30 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and while they do lose a few guys from a season ago, they did retain quite a few guys from what I always like to call a whole is greater than the sum of its parts sort of team, and with the Southern unit, I do think that they're going to be able to hold in there. Bringing back a Cam Embroy, who was able to give you like 8 or so points per contest a season ago, is rock solid. They've got just a lot of connective pieces in the backcourt, and even though they didn't really have a single guy that gave you over 5 rebounds per game 8 seasons ago, they were a top 50 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that did result in an offensive rebound. So I like the way that things are put together, and it looks like they're probably going to be turning things over to Michael Jacobs in terms of being that primary scorer. He had 22 points night number one against Arkansas. Last year he was averaging about 11 to 12 points per contest. He and Damari Jones, I think, are going to be big time difference makers in the backcourt, and for Marquette, they just refuse to utilize the transfer portal. And I love teams that they bring back a lot of chemistry, what have you. That's always relatively well and good, but we saw them get a little bit of a test in that first half against Albany before their defense just really, really took hold, and it does appear to be a Marquette team that's probably going to be dialing back their tempo a little bit. They generate 23 turnovers on Albany, so they did a nice job there with Chase Ross having 15 points, 5 steals in that game. He's the main scorer that returns from a season ago. They're looking to these guys like Trey Norman, Darius Owens, who didn't necessarily see massive roles in past seasons, to be able to step up. Ben Gold only had 5 points, night number one. He's a 6'11 big man that's able to pop it from 3. I think that he's going to be able to view quite a bit moving forward, but I do think that with Marquette, they're going to be looking for a little bit of an identity. I think it's becoming clear that Chase Ross is probably going to be the head of the sink for the team, but I do think that there might be a little bit of struggle along the way. Marquette, they themselves had 14 turnovers, night number one, so I do think that Southern, with their ability to be able to generate turnovers, that keeps them lively in this game. Southern typically a top 100 team in terms of total possessions per game, but I think there's a lot of sloppiness with a pair of teams that generate turnovers, so semi-total up here at a 146.5. I like the under, and 19-plus here with Southern. 306-629, 306-630. It is Alabama A&M on the road against Indiana. Indiana is a 24 to a 25.5 point favorite. Total on this game, it is 144 to a 146.5, and I'm in on the under. I said my total of 140.5. You've got a pair of coaching changes that should really grind down these two teams, as for Alabama A&M, they bring in Grambling's head coach from a season ago, and Alabama A&M was one of the more harebrained and more crazy teams in all of college basketball, so I think that that's warping things a little bit here. Dante Jackson, he's always been known as being a good defensive tactician. He brought with him a few guys from Grambling, including Kentavious Dozier, who's given that team right around about 11 to 12 points per game. He brings in Sammy Pasisis, who he was over at New Hampshire last season. He was a nice double-figure scorer, so this is a team that's going to be solid in the backcourt. So I have to have some question marks down low, but they bring in James Flippen. He was pretty flipping good last season over at Grambling. Another guy that followed on over, he was able to give the team right around about 7.5 points per contest. Not necessarily too much of a rebounder last season, but if you look at what happened night number one, it looks like he's going to be a little bit more of a featured guy down low, along James Graham, who began his career over at Buffalo, Missouri State, so he's a guy that has been around the block. And then on the other end, you've got an Indiana team that they are getting back into the DeVries squared era, as you've got Darren DeVries. He brings over his son, Tucker DeVries, who he only played a few games last season over at West Virginia. Last we saw him in a full season over at Drake, he was averaging 21.5 points, 6.5 boards, 3.5 assists. Just a guy that's able to do a little bit of everything, a career 37% three-point shooter. Do have to wonder how he's going to be looking night number one with a team with a lot of guys that are going to be very new look. You've got quite a few guys that were at the mid-major ranks, but you do have a nice facilitator in Connor Enright. He wasn't necessarily the biggest time player when he was over at Drake, but he did play under DeVries over at Drake last year over at DePaul. He was giving out 6 assists per contest, did have the 3 turnovers per game, not necessarily a super-duper scorer, but someone that I think is going to be able to do a nice job running this offense. You bring in Sam Alexis, who he was a part of that title-winning Florida team from the season ago, really didn't get out there on the floor too much when he saw more, shall we say, prolific minutes over at Chattanooga, 11.9 boards, 2 blocks per contest, so he should be able to hold it down there and win that battle against this Grambling team, but I do think that's going to take a little bit of time for things to be able to take hold. Nick Dorn, Tayton Conaway, these are guys that are taking a big step up in competition. Jason Drake was a solid scorer over at Drexel last year. Last year, he was putting in there 11 points, shot about 40% from three-point range, so he should be able to give some rough and tumble, and I think that these are going to be two very slow and controlled teams. Grambling was well outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game last year. Same for West Virginia in terms of those coaching changes, so semi-total 140.5, like the under. I did set Indiana here as a favorite of 24.5 points, so right now, seeing the 25.5, I'd be willing to take those points with Alabama A&M. 306-631, 306-632. Mississippi State is playing us at North Alabama. North Alabama, 24-24.5 point underdogs. So last game, it is 154.5, and I made this line 17.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points with North Alabama. With Mississippi State, it's big that they bring back Josh Hubbard. He was the heart and soul of that team a season ago, a guy that was able to supply you with 18-plus points per contest, a mid-30s three-point shooter, but Mississippi State has always been a team that has been, shall we say, questionable with regards to their three-point shooting. They're looking at raw horsepower to be able to get the job done, and they bring in a guy in Quincy Ballard, who he's a true seven-footer that last year when he was over at Wichita State was able to give the team 2 blocks, 10 points, 9 rebounds per game, so he's going to do a nice job holding it down low, but they don't have as much depth down low as they've had in the past. The freshmen like T. Bartlett and Jumarion Davis Fleming are probably going to need to see some big-time minutes, and what you're going to be able to get out of a Kurukuru is a little bit of, shall we say, question mark, because last we saw him at Sanford 2 seasons ago, 16 points per game on 43.5% three-point shooting at 6'9", do-it-all sort of player, played just 7 games over at Kansas State last season, had some off-court issues, had some just injury issues as well, so you do have to have your question marks and your concerns there, and for North Alabama, they came just 1 game away from making the NCAA tournament a season ago. Tony Poole, he has done a really good job with this program. Now, they are going to have to turn over a lot of that talent from a season ago, but bringing back Dallas Howell, I think, is absolutely massive. He was limited just 3 games last season. 2 years ago, he was averaging 8.5 points, 5.5 boards, a career 34.5% three-point shooter at 6'7". He gives the versatility that you need to be able to hold in there against an SEC team. Cornelius Williams, he's a really good rebounder that is also back for this team after he last year, 9 boards, 9.5 points per contest for a North Alabama team that up until last year, they were a little bit more of a team that was based around their backcourt. They were based around really good shooting. They clearly have taken a little bit of a step in a different direction here. You don't have as much of that backcourt from a year ago, so you're probably going to be relying upon someone like a King Walker who comes over from the non-Division I ranks to be able to give you some good minutes right away. I do think that you're probably going to be seeing a lot moving forward out of some of the freshmen like Cortez Graham Howard. I heard some relatively good things about DeSure King. Hopefully you got that correct. He was a guy that was relatively glued to the bench a season ago. He's going to need to take some strides forward as well as a bit of a wing player, but I do think that with North Alabama having all those guys down low like Howell and Williams, that allows them to be able to hold in this game, and I do think that that's going to cause for a little bit of a lower scoring game. Mississippi State has always been a pretty tough, tenacious defense under Chris Jans, so I did set a total more in the neighborhood of a 145.5. I like that under to go along with the points with North Alabama. 306-633, 306-634. This is a game that's off the board between Fresno State and USC Upstate. I set Fresno State as a 10-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 9.5 with them. 10.5 or more, I'm going to be willing to take those points with USC Upstate. And then I set a total of a 158. So 157.5 or less, I'm in on the over. 158.5 or higher, the under. If you look at the comments of Fresno State, their coaching staff really loves their team this year, but who doesn't love their team? And for Fresno State, they were involved in the gambling scandal last year, and just flat out, Fresno State was not a very good team. They were looking to play up tempo. You could tell that the style that they were looking to play was very much trying to run it and gun it. It just wasn't very successful whatsoever, and I do think that Fresno State has built a little bit more to be able to play a bit more high octane under Vance Wahlberg this season. I do think that bringing back a guy in Zaion Collins, who was one of the few guys that was not involved in the gambling scandal last year, was averaging about 12.5 points per contest, 32% three-point shooter, 4.5 assists per game, another year under the system. I think that's going to be boding well for them. And Jake Heidbreiter, he began his career over at Air Force. He played a little bit of time over at Clemson. He should be a nice upside guy when he really saw significant minutes over at Air Force during the 2022-23 campaign. 40% three-point shooter with about 15 points per game. This team is probably going to be lacking a little bit more down low. You're going to be probably utilizing Jacquemani, who he had some very significant minutes. Night number one comes over from UC Davis, where he wasn't seeing a ton of minutes. So you do have to have your question marks and your concerns on that front. And with regards to the flip side for USC Upstate, this was one of the lesser teams in all of college basketball last year, to say the least. And night number one was not necessarily what you were looking for out of this team. But you bring in Coach Richter, who was a nice assistant over at Drake a few seasons ago. And I do think that there's going to be a little bit of upside with regards to Upstate. In that night number one loss, they were able to generate 75 points. And Kamani Gregory, who was one of their top scorers from a season ago, he returns. He had 22 points in that season opening game last year. He was averaging in that neighborhood about 11 points per contest. Not a great three-point shooter in USC Upstate. They were well outside the top 275 in terms of their three-point shooting a season ago. But Lyric Davis is a former top 250 recruit that began his career over at Tennessee State, UW-Milwaukee. Never really found his footing over there. He had 15 points in that season opening game. I think that they might have been able to find a little bit of something there. This is very much an undersized team, other than the 7'1" big man in Cohen Collier, who he had 1 point and 6 rebounds night number one. You really don't have anyone above 6'8", so you're going to be staring at a lot of guys that are going to have a little bit of a tough time on the glass. That said, for Fresno State, they don't knock your socks off down low this year as well, and I do think if USC Upstate is going to have some success, they're going to need to find that primary guard, as they didn't necessarily have a lot of facilitation despite getting 75 points night number one. But I do think that there might be a little bit of upside with regards to Carmelo Edkins, a guy that has been in the system, a guy that stands right around about 6'4", has a little bit of versatility, and a season ago, he was able to put in there about 10 points, was one of the few guys that shot above 33% from three-point range. So I do think that you're going to get a nice up-and-down game. Upstate was a top 50 team in terms of total possessions per game last season, so 157.5 or less, and on the over 158.5 or higher, the under will underlay up to 9.5 here with Fresno State, 10.5 or more. Take the points with Upstate, and we're wrapping things up with 306-635, 306-636. New Mexico plays host to East Texas A&M. East Texas A&M is a underdog of 21.5 points, 142.5 is the total. Sits up a total of 142.5, so we're going to be looking for a little bit of line movement. If this dips down to 142 or less, in on the over 143 or higher, the under. But I'm going to be willing to take the points with East Texas A&M, set them as an 18.5 point underdog. Now for New Mexico, I do think that there's plenty of upside with this unit, and I thought that they did a really good job in terms of making the best of a situation where they lose their coach in Pitino in the offseason. You hire on a guy that was able to do an incredible job leading UC San Diego to the NCAA tournament, and Eric Olin did bring with him a few guys from that UC San Diego team from a season ago. Not necessarily the prolific scores from a year ago, but with that said, Chris Hell, he was a very nice sort of do-it-all sort of player for UC San Diego last year. Only about 5.5 points per contest, but 3 assists, 2 steals per game, and that was really the lifeblood of UC San Diego. They did a really good job in terms of generating turnovers. I don't know if they quite have that with this roster this year, but I like the upside of Dayton Aubrey, a guy that was a double-figure scorer over at Queens NC 2 seasons ago, and still saw solid minutes as a starter over at Utah State last year. He was given the team 8 points, shot 43% from 3 points, generated about 1 steal per contest. This is going to be an undersized seed outside of JT Rock, and Rock, he was over at Iowa State, a pretty highly touted freshman, but just was lost in the shadow of so many guys over there at Iowa State. But having someone like a Kevin Patton Jr., who is a 6'8" do-it-all sort of player that was rock solid over at San Diego a few seasons ago, and still saw some okay minutes over at USC last season, he was able to, when he was at San Diego, give you a block and a half, two 2.5 assists. He very much fits the system, so I like what he's able to bring to the table. And for East Texas A&M last year, they were one of your lesser teams in all of college basketball, so they certainly have a lot of work to do under Jerry Von Rosenberg, but they did a nice job in terms of being able to stick with their positionless style and adding in their one big man that should be able to really elevate things. And Michael Florian, you saw him night number one be able to give the team 11 points per contest, someone that when he was beginning his career over at St. Bonaventure had a little bit of promise, has just dealt with so many injuries over the last few seasons, so I do think that there's some upside there. Tay Mosher, he began his career over at East Carolina, and he last season for this Commerce team / East Texas A&M, 5.5 points. It looks like he's going to be able to take some steps forward this season as well. And then with regards to being able to just redo this backcourt, having a 6-of-6 combo player, Ronnie Harrison, who was rock solid at Tarleton State in terms of generating turnovers, that's a nice place to be able to start. He was just really robbed by injuries, and that was really the theme for East Texas A&M. They took a lot of chances on guys that were dealing with a whole bunch of injuries, and then they've got Josh Shadler back as well, who, if he's able to find his footing, when he was at East Tennessee State for his final year there during the 2022-23 campaign, 7 points, 5 rebounds per game, but again, a guy that was really robbed by injuries that season. You've got some promise here. These guys are healthy as of right now. You also bring in G&I Hunt, too. He has been in college basketball for seemingly 500 years. He was a part of that team of Oregon State that made it to the Elite Eight. That's how long this guy has been in college basketball. He's on his 7th year of eligibility, but that said, he's a guy that has been around the block. When he saw a big role over at Cal State Northridge, he was only out 4 assists per game, so I do think that there's a little bit of upside here with East Texas A&M. They have yet to have any injuries take hold on this team, so semi-line at 18.5, I'm going to be one take the points with East Texas A&M, and at a 143 or higher in on the under, 142 or less, I'll be taking a shot on the over. And that'll wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. A big thanks to our good friend in Curtis Rogers, who does such great work over at 710 Seattle Sports. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast, regular season and off season, and finally have games back in our lives, so you need picks and analysis on every single game, every single day. So I'll be back with you once you get them all. Thank you.